there has been research that says if you have this idea that you're old or have this ageist mentality or thinking about yourself, it reduces your lifespan by 7.5 years. That there has been research that says that.
Yes, I read that.
Oh, okay. So the reality is, you know, we live in an ageist society. You know, there are jokes, there are comments. This one person said, and I felt the same way as she did, actually, when someone says, oh, you look great for your age. And I say, well, what am I supposed to look like?
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hi, Sylvia. So thrilled to be here with you. I'm Phyllis Amon. I'm a number one Wall Street Journal and USA bestselling author and a podcast host myself in years past. I did a recent TEDx talk, which is, I think, how our conversation began. And it's, Are You an Evolving Elder? And because I've spent over 50,000 hours working in long-term care. So that's what brings me to this conversation. So welcome to Sylvia and me. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Phyllis, thank you so much. This is great. As you said, we were talking. In fact, we were sitting at the bar listening to jazz a couple of months ago. And we got on the conversation of age and older and elder, and we're going to talk about all of that. As you said, you are a TEDx talk. You've written the book that I've read is Dignity and Respect. Are our aging parents getting what they deserve? And we're going to really hit on so much of that. One of the other things is you're the ambassador for conscious aging life management. And you've worked at many long-term and short-term facilities of all sizes. And so what I want to start with is you talk about, in fact, you just mentioned it, evolving elders. We get so stuck in what is a child, what is a teenager, oh, I'm middle-aged, oh, I'm a young adult, oh, you know, I'm really not a senior, but I want those senior discounts. You know, so we have aging, we have older, we have evolving elders. So why talk about evolving elder?
Great question. So I came to this actually because I did embrace for many years that this is your future self. And one day it really hit me that that's really so far down the road and outside of yourself. And, you know, many of us, I'm sure when we're younger, think of our, you know, our later years, let's say, or what we're going to achieve. And maybe we're going to be married or have a house or whatever that is, children, whatever that is. But we don't really see ourselves as an older person in that picture. We just see that picture. And so it dawned on me, if we're going to change how we think about older people, we have to start to address younger people. And the reality is we are all aging from the time we're born. Our cells age. I mean, it's just a natural process. So it dawned on me that we really are evolving into that stage. And wouldn't it be great if children can start to see themselves as an evolving elder, a stage they're trying to reach, rather than, oh, I don't want to get there. That's so far down the road. That's not me. But it's like I'm a work in progress.
Well, we're all a work in progress.
Well, that's true. Well, some of us are and some of us aren't, but I'm with you there.
You know, the funny thing is if we're not a work in progress, then we're done.
I agree.
There's nothing else to do. And wouldn't that be boring? And so do I want children to think about, as they get older, I'd like a child to think about being a child and looking forward to certain things. I agree. That I totally agree with. To me, unfortunately, these days we push children too young to be to take on a lot. But I would like to, as you spoke about, we are evolving. And as we get older, we need to embrace what may or may not lay ahead, you know, lie ahead. And so evolving elder, you know, as we're in our 20s, we're in our 30s, we're in our 40s, so many people are so afraid. First, they can't wait to be a certain right. age. And you did this in your TEDx talk, right. you know, a 9-year-old can't wait to be 10 because it's double digits. A 10-year-old can't wait to be 13. In the Jewish religions, they become a man or a woman. And right. then they can't wait to be a teenager. Then they can't wait to hopefully to be 18, to be able to vote. But also at that age, as a parent, you can't do anything for you. You can't get diddly squat as far as information on them. And then at 21, oh, they can drink. Who knows?
Right.
But there's always these milestones that we're looking at until we don't want to look at the milestones anymore
Correct.
Because we're afraid.
Correct.
So let's talk about aging versus getting old.
Right. That's great. I love the way you framed that. And interestingly enough, just yesterday, I attended the 34th session of the United Nations International Day of Older Persons. And tomorrow is Ageism Awareness Day. And we're recording this on October 7th. So
obviously
it's October 8th, whenever this will be recorded, you know, this will be out there. But so aging as opposed to getting older. So aging, actually, we're getting older.
Yes.
I use that terminology. We're getting older.
We always are every day.
Correct. But we're not getting old. I think it's that word old. And you brought up my TEDx talk, you know, when you ask a little child, how old are you? And they hold up their cute little fingers and they say, oh, I'm 3 or 4, whatever. It's very cute. But when you're 60 years old and 70 years old and 80 years old, that word old isn't so much fun anymore. And I think, I just spoke to somebody recently who said, well, they use the word old and they think it's great. And they are 50 and they feel old and they want to celebrate that. And I guess she and I, we have a difference of opinion about that, because I think it's about, and everybody has their own belief
yes.
about that. But interestingly enough, what I heard yesterday was they say that there has been research that says if you have this idea that you're old or have this ageist mentality or thinking about yourself, it reduces your lifespan by 7.5 years. That there has been research that says that.
Yes, I read that.
Oh, okay. So the reality is, you know, we live in an ageist society. You know, there are jokes, there are comments. This one person said, and I felt the same way as she did, actually, when someone says, oh, you look great for your age. And I say, well, what am I supposed to look like?
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, we don't, it nowadays, that is not really even a compliment, because we don't know. Now, if someone comes up to you and says, hey, you look great, fantastic. Thank
right.
you. You look great for your age. And I've said this before, I've gone back to the 50s and 60s where people did look older, 16-year-olds, because of the way we dressed back then, with the fitted, you know, dresses like on Leave It to Beaver and
right.
the curls and the hair, the heels and the hair. So a 16-year-old, if you look at Sweet 16s, which girls did
right.
back then, they look like they were in their 20s.
Right.
But as the women's lib, as things started changing, as the beatnik, which nobody remembers anymore, but the hippie they'll
That's
remember
right.
and so on. The idea of being able to freely express yourself, and we're talking about in just clothing. And so that kind of it got us into a more relaxed atmosphere. So where we don't know what a person really, we know what some, when somebody doesn't look good, when they look sickly or they don't look good. But what people are might just be learning is the fact that you put a smile on your face.
Right.
It brightens up everything. And you don't look your age, you know, give me a break. At some point, you know, not looking your age in quotes could be detrimental.
But I agree. So I just want to address a couple of things you just said. First, about the smile. So I have a friend that started something called the Keep Smiling Movement. And he started it. His mother had Alzheimer's and he was with her for many years during that process. And he just realized how important smiles were. And he started this Keep Smiling Movement. And he had these books that were written that are part of this Keep Smiling Movement. And I wrote a chapter in one of these books. And everybody had to have their own quote about smiles. So my quote was that a smile is the least expensive accessory that goes with any outfit.
It is.
Okay. It costs nothing, right? It costs nothing. And not only does it make the person you're smiling at feel better, but it makes you feel better because all of the feelings that are associated with a genuine smile, not a forced smile. Okay. So that's one aspect of what you said. And it's interesting what you said about dressing. So I'm 71. And, I remember like about 15 years ago when I'm actually a certified fashion stylist. So I love fashion and style and all those and colors and putting different things together. And I'd shop in certain stores. And sometimes I say, gee, is this too young for me? Or should I be wearing this? But I ditched that about 10 years ago. But I think that is true. That's part of it. But people still have this idea about what a person of that age should look like. And I have to say, even my own kids, and people don't understand this when I tell this to them, they can't relate to me because I think they themselves have this idea of what I'm supposed to be or look like, and they can't really deal with it. You know,
that's very true. And the thing is, as you said, if we don't feel... We need to be able to put something on and look in the mirror and say, wow, everyone has their own style and it has to come out. And yes, I know that my children have looked at me like, excuse me, what is that? I was with someone for a number of years. And every time, you know, I got dressed, he'd like, oh, is that part of an outfit? Is that... you're going to get dressed in one of your outfits? You know, it's like, whatever, isn't it great to put something on? I mean, you have to have a sense of who you are and feel good about yourself. You don't want to walk around looking like a clown, but sometimes putting on something fun is a fun thing to do. Why not? And it just drives me crazy when I look in these magazines and it's, this is what a 30-year outfit's for 30-year-olds, for 40-year-olds, for 50-year-olds. They don't usually go beyond 60, which is a shame because we're both in our 70s. And heck, because it doesn't matter if you feel good. I mean, hopefully neither one of us walks outside looking like, I don't know what. But if I'm sure I know I have my bad days.
Right.
So what?
Right.
You know, it works. But that smile does so much. And there's such a perception of who we're supposed to be. You know, men have it easy as far as what they're supposed to wear. You know, I was thinking about it the other day when I got in my car. I always have to move my seat either forward or back, depending on the shoes I'm wearing.
Right. Exactly.
So. Let's talk about the fact that in the U.S., I believe there's over 100 million people over the age of 50, and it's projected that in 2030, anyone over 65 is going to outnumber, I believe it's 18-year-olds.
18 and under, yep.
Right. And about 10,000 people on a daily basis turn 65.
Correct.
So... What do we, where are we looking at? I, you know, one of the words that I want to go into after we talk about, you know, we've talked about old, we've talked about aging. And I think you define, put in the defining terms of it, why they're different.
Right.
And that's so important. That really is. But one of the other things that I would like to talk about is you have actually trademarked a word called empathy, I-M-P-A-T-H-Y. Not empathy, right, but empathy. Because so many of us are turning older, we're getting older. There's so many people over 65. Your book talked about, you know, aging and our parents getting what they deserve. A lot of us, I mean, so many of baby boomers are taking care of parents, but then there's a lot of children taking care of baby boomers and so on and so on, because we're all living longer. So tell me about that word, empathy.
So I'm glad you asked about that. So it's interesting. I was actually doing a training at a nursing home, and it was about communication and empathy and all of that kind of thing. And I was doing these exercises, and somebody said, wow, that's like about empathy for yourself. And I said, that's a good point. And because I was doing things about mindfulness and being present and feeling yourself and understanding yourself. And I was actually doing an exercise about smiling. Some people couldn't even do it or weren't willing to do it, which is another scary thing. So I came home and I started thinking about it. And I said, well, gee, empathy for yourself, that's an interesting thing. Maybe there should be a word about that. And I came up with this word. And you know, I didn't really have an acronym when I started it, but I came up with an acronym. So it's I'm present, active, thankful, healthy, and like yours truly me, like it's a letter to yourself. And I say self-care is well-care. So interestingly enough, just yesterday at this International Day of Older Persons, there was one speaker from the UK, and he said that 25% of the population that is 65 and older, and they really didn't prepare for it, and the healthcare system was buckling. And the reality is that, even in this country, our own healthcare system, or I call it the medical care system, because I've worked in that system, and it's medical care. It's not, it's kind of like sick care, not well care. That we're spending so much money, and even though we're advancing in their advances in extending life, and that's great, science has done that. But what about wellness? What's the point of living to 100 or longer if you're not well? And this word is really about embracing strategies for wellness. I call it a recipe for healthful living, or for age well living. And I have a course that goes along with it and all that kind of thing. And but, you know, even at this International Day of Older Persons, they were talking about that, about not only longevity, and there are books about this, about healthful longevity, but it's really about that. So I started working on another book. I had come up with this title a while ago, and I was really inspired the other day. And so I started writing this prologue, and I started with something you started with, which is, you know, I remember when I was a little girl saying, I wanted to be older, right? And then I remember my granddaughter, who's now my oldest granddaughter, who's 10, several years ago, saying, oh, mommy, I just want to be grown up and whatever. And we had this whole conversation with her about what that's about. And then I was thinking that, if you're going to grow older, right, and you're not taking care of yourself, you know, your body is like, I call it your body, your car. It's your vehicle. It's the only one that's carrying you through life. And I kind of I likened it to personal responsibility. And I started recalling that my father died when I was a teenager and he was diabetic, and all these people that I see in all these nursing homes, we all know that things happen to us that we have no control over, but if we make better choices, right, then we probably increase our chances of living more healthfully. And that's what is incorporated in this whole empathy, is it's for yourself. Self-care is well care.
Self-care is well care, and it's not vanity. If we don't take care of ourselves to the best of our ability, then it falls onto somebody else sometime down the road to hopefully be there to take care of us. As you said, there are certain things that we have no control over, but then there are others that we do. We have control over how we take care of ourselves, you know, movement and exercise and diet and even going out and communicating with other people. It's, you know, one of the things that has been written about and studied is the loneliness with older people. And that is horrible. There are so many who won't go out because they feel they're too old. You know, younger people don't want to have anything to do with the older people. The older people think that they shouldn't have anything to do with the younger people. And yet again, studies, we need to mingle. We need to have all generations. I mean, just think about sitting around a dinner table with you know, different generations and actually having a conversation and what we could learn, not only what they could learn from us as we have lived our lives, but also what we could learn from them and where they're at. Maybe they're stuck someplace, or maybe there's something new that they're doing that, hey, you know, I might want to try that. And I'm not talking skateboarding, but, you know, not for me. I'm sorry.
Not for me either,
it's just the intergenerational, and people don't understand that.
Yeah, they don't understand the importance of it. Just yesterday, I do remember hearing about this place. And just last night, I saw the commercial about it. So SUNY Purchase has developed this older community on the college campus. And I think that's fantastic, because talk about the opportunity for generations to mingle. So I'm working on this film project. I think I told you about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the takeaway is about valuing older adults, but a very important part of the story is this relationship between older people and younger people and what they can learn from each other. It's not a one-way street, right?
Well, that's the thing. It's not a one-way street. And it's so important that people understand that. It is definitely not a one-way street. And as we've mentioned several times today, you know, we are living longer. And why not have the best life that we can while we can?
Absolutely.
Again, things will happen that we have no control over. It's getting up to that point and being able to say, hey, I'm not sitting back waiting for somebody to take care of me. I need to take care of me. It's so important, because you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
Correct. I mean, and it is about choices, and it's about, so I say it's simple, but it's not easy.
No.
It's not easy to make changes. It's about choices. It's about habits. And we're so indoctrinated, and we're actually the victims of advertising and marketing. And you know, there's a commercial on television. Every time I see it, I talk to the television. I say, really, they're still showing this commercial? Like, they're not taking it off because of me. It's marketing, right? So here's these people, and maybe some of your listeners will have heard or seen this commercial. So it's a person, a group of people. who are singing and dancing about the fact that they have type 2 diabetes and they're taking this drug. It just unnerves me every time I see that. Why are we glorifying this when there are like between 70 and 90 million people in this country who are pre-diabetic and don't even know it, and yet we're continuing to push food choices that really would contribute to them becoming diabetic? And diabetes is costing this country so much money, not only the cost to the person. And so I actually... there is an initiative, the Rockefeller Foundation launched a $100 million initiative for food as medicine. So people don't think of it that way, but it has to be the right foods, right? It can't be. And we all love what we love, and we think that we're stuck eating that, but it's really just conditioning and marketing and we are kind of victims in a way to our, even to our past, right? So I was at a facility recently, and I was doing some coverage, and the administrator decided to buy pizza for everybody in the building, which was a very nice thing. And they were like, "Oh, Phyllis, you're going to have some." I said, "I don't eat that anymore." And they were like, "Well, what do you mean you don't eat that anymore?" I said, "It's just not a food that I really eat." Now, that doesn't mean I can never eat a slice of pizza, right? But it's not a food choice that I really indulge in anymore. And is it easy to give up some of those things? No. But is it better for me? Probably.
Well, again, it's choices. And we all, you know, we all make certain choices, and we all have to manage our lives to the best of our ability.
Right.
And again, those are choices that we can make.
Right. And I say, you know, is it one day or day one? You know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the second best time is today. So you could still make a choice to do some things a little differently that could contribute to your well-being. It could be something simple. I was surprised that they even mentioned this yesterday, because it's one of the things I talk about the most, is that 70% of the American population is seriously dehydrated. And dehydration leads to high blood pressure and actually weight gain. People aren't even aware of that, and poor sleep. And people don't even realize the effects of dehydration. And they think, well, I drink juice, I drink coffee, but it's really just water. And I was surprised that they even brought that up. And that's a small change that somebody can make. I mean, they may have to take steps to get there, to find out how much water they should drink for their body size and weight and all of that. But there are simple things we can do that could really make a tremendous difference, right? What do they say? Small hinges swing big doors, right?
And it's true. One small step, you know, right. Man, one small step, you know, and it's just, and that's the thing. It, with anything else in life, you can start someplace. And that one small change could make a difference. And that might be the only change you make.
Right.
That's all well and good. But we need to, not a but, we really need to figure out how to get more people to stop being so afraid of getting older and embrace where they are. And where they came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, once we can do that, wow, you know, we could smile a little bit more. We could see, you know, people, we could even maybe the people who are so afraid of getting older, who are lonely because they can't accept.
Right.
You know, again, it's one small step.
Right. And that's why I like to say older as opposed to old.
Oh, we're all getting older.
Older. Right. Because it's a different, I believe just that change in that word is a different mindset, you know, kind of creates a different mindset. So I am getting older. Everybody's getting older, like you say, but that doesn't mean I'm old. So a couple of weeks ago, I decided to go out for brunch, in Old Greenwich, a place that I like. And I found a little table outside, and there was a young couple sitting next to me. And the little girl says to me, "Oh, is, you know, I have red hair. So is red your favorite color?" I said, "No, it's purple." And we start talking about colors and blah, blah, blah. And so I have this gray patch on the side that I've kept because I have this idea. It shows my station in life. And she asked me why I didn't, you know, all of my hair isn't red. So I told her that. And I said, "I'm very proud of my age. I'm 71. And she said, "You're 71? You don't look 71. I said, "Well, what is 71 supposed to look like?" So she said, "You're supposed to have a lot of wrinkles and have a lot of gray hair." And she was six. So there you go. Here's this little girl, age six, who already has this preconceived notion of what an older person should look like or be like. And I really believe in order to change that within ourselves, the paradigm shift have to come from young children.
Most definitely. Evolving elders, aging life management. Phyllis, thank you so much for being with us here today. Where can people find out more about you?
Okay, so my website is Phyllis, my name, PhyllisAmonAssociates.com. It's PHYLLIS, and my last name, Amon, AYMAN, Associates.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn. And I was going to say, if anybody wants to find out more, right, they could text me their email address. Can I give my phone number?
If you want.
Yeah.
That's up to you.
It's 203-886-6934. And I'd be happy to talk with someone for 20 or 30 minutes and give them some information. Or, you know, I have a wellness quotient questionnaire if they wanted to take it for themselves and decide, you know, where they want to go with that. You know, that could be a little self-assessment. Maybe they could find a place where they can make a little change that can help their wellness.
Phyllis, again, thank you so much. This is a conversation that we have to keep on having.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Sylvia. It was so terrific. And I'm so glad we had a chance to enjoy jazz and experience music, because music is important for our well-being, for our smiling, for our, you know, there's a lot that about music in the brain and the positive effects of it. So look what happened as a result of listening to some music and sitting next to each other at a bar in Westport. Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.